If you haven't finished your Christmas shopping, the pressure is certainly on. And you may think that making a present would be totally out of the question, but one of our favorite guests, Melissa Clark, has stopped by with some suggestions for homemade edible gifts, a wonderful way to escape overcrowded stores and feel a more personal connection to what you're giving to others. Melissa, who is the author of a slew of cookbooks, also writes A Good Appetite, the Wednesday column in the New York Times dining section, and you can follow her on Twitter, where her handle is @goodappetite. I'm very pleased that she could join us again today. And we hope that if any of you have your own recipes for edible gifts, that you will write us on our show page. You can give us a call at 212-433-9692. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. On Twitter, our handle is @LeonardThopate. So, Melissa, have you finished your shopping for the holidays?
Oh, no. I'm embarrassed to admit I've barely started my shopping, but I have been making wonderful edible gifts because most of the people who I want to give an edible gift to are friends and colleagues, and I wanted to do it by today or by yesterday. So I've done that, and I have a lot of advice for listeners who want to give out things over the weekend or Monday or Tuesday.
But isn't there always a problem with edible gifts that if you make them too far in advance, they're going to just go stale? If you want to send them through the mail,
yes,
you have no idea of what state they're going to arrive in.
Yeah, the mailing is hard. There's a couple of things that I love to mail, though. You have to, obviously, you want to pick something sturdy. I have had very good success with toffee. So you make a toffee, you make an English toffee, you know, a nice crisp toffee, and then I put traditional, you put chocolate on top and then you can put nuts. But here's something fun that you can do with toffee. So another favorite thing that people love to make is bark, chocolate bark, which is when you melt chocolate and you put nuts and dried fruit and maybe some candied orange peel or candied lemon peel is fabulous on bark. So I like to combine the two. So I'll do a toffee base, and then I'll do the melted chocolate, and on top of the melted chocolate, I'll do something that looks like a bark. So you have one of my favorite combinations is pistachio nuts and dried cherries because it looks very Christmassy. It's very pretty. It's very easy. And then on the bottom, you have that crunchy, delicious butter crunch toffee. It is a great gift, and it's solid. The trick to it is break it up into really big pieces. You know, you break toffee up by hand, so you get those pretty irregular pieces. Break it up into big pieces rather than small pieces. They tend to just fall apart a little bit less.
And then let the people who receive them break them up.
Exactly. They can break them up even more.
But also, because you don't want to make things too far in advance, this is one of the only good things for procrastinators.
That's true. You can make the most delicate cookies right now, and they're going to last. I mean, of course, you can make gingerbread ahead. That's going to last for weeks. Anything really sturdy, like a chocolate chip cookie, will even last a week if you store it right.
Do you freeze them?
I don't freeze them. I think they're fine for a few days. I mean, what I start to do is I start to make things ahead, and I make things ahead as to their keeping quality. So I start with the gingerbread, then I'll do like the nutty chewies, like the oatmeal raisin, or, you know, I'll do oatmeal with candied ginger, which is really nice and kind of Christmassy. Or I'll do the chocolate chips, and then I'll do like the hearty chocolate, like big chewy chocolate cookies, and then I'll do the more delicate ones, and then I'll do the shortbreads, and then you end with the butter cookies right before you pack up your boxes.
So you're doing a lot of baking right now.
You know, before I had my daughter, I used to make these really elaborate chocolate boxes, and I would start them. I would actually probably start 3 weeks out with the doughs, and, you know, I'd freeze them, and I'd made these crazy boxes. Then when I had her, everything stopped, and I would, if I made one cookie, I was happy. And this is the first year that I actually started to do a little bit of a cookie box again, and you have one waiting for you.
After the show,
yeah. And the trick to a cookie box, as I've learned from doing this for a lot of years, is that you want to have at least 6 different kinds of cookies in that box. So that's because it's so nice for people to find, oh, what's hidden under the green tea shortbread? Oh, look, it's a teeny little bourbon ball. And that element of surprise is really wonderful. And you don't need a lot of cookies in the boxes. You just need a good variety.
Is this something that you started doing, or is this something that your mother used to do?
Oh, God, no. My mother was very practical. She's a great cook, but she was a practical cook. And I mean, I'll do things like I'll make 3 different colors of icing, and I'll apply the icing, and I'll put the little silver dragées on them. And that was way too fussy for her. So this is my own tradition. However, they do love to get a box of those cookies. I mean, who doesn't?
it's okay if somebody else has done all the work.
Exactly. They can appreciate it. But my mother's idea of a great holiday gift, which is my idea of a great holiday gift too, is something that you can do, like a pound cake you can do, or something you can bake a bunch of them at a time, like a bunch of zucchini breads, or I guess in the winter, banana breads, something like that. And those are great for people who waited till the last minute, because a banana bread in those individual little loaf pans that you can buy, those paper loaf pans, what you do is you make your banana bread special. You put chocolate chips and candied ginger, and then you do a pretty icing on top, and you decorate it, and you maybe with some candied orange. You know, candied fruit is great this time of year. It looks beautiful. You wrap it up individually, and that's not that hard to make. You can make all the batter at once and then just put it into those pans. And this is something you can do today or tomorrow, and you'll have it for Christmas.
Gabrielle, one of our listeners, wrote on Twitter that her favorite edible gift is homemade layered cookie mix in a jar.
Ooh.
So she sends flour, sugar, spices, etc., and all you have to do
is add the
water, oil, and the egg.
That is brilliant. That reminds me of something that I did a couple of years ago, something very similar. I did homemade whole wheat pancake mix, like a whole grain pancake mix, and you put them in these pretty jars, and then you do them, you give instructions on how to make them and a big ribbon, and then you also give a big bottle of good maple syrup. And that's just a lovely gift for people, because they can use it on Christmas morning. They can make pancakes with your pancake mix. And it's something you can do really quickly, and it keeps well. And it's also something that you can send in the mail. Maybe you might want to just be careful about getting a really sturdy jar, though. But
my guest is Melissa Clark, the James Beard Award-winning food writer, who writes the A Good Appetite column in the dining section The New York Times and NewYorkTimes.com every Wednesday. You can also follow her on Twitter at Good Appetite. How did you come up with your gingerbread frogs, the recipe that we have put up on our show page at WMIC.org?
Yes.
Why frogs?
I like to cut gingerbreads into all kinds of whimsical shapes. I mean, most people, when you do gingerbread cookies, you do your Christmas trees and you do your little gingerbread people, and those are great, and your little angels. But I like to do feet. Have you ever seen feet cookie cutters? They're hilarious, and you can paint them purple and give people purple gingerbread feet. I don't know. For some reason, I think that's very funny. And gingerbread frogs. I make them green. I do green icing and then green sugar. They're sparkly. They're pretty. And I think they're funny. I don't know why. It appeals to me to have really off different shapes. And you can buy cookie cutters.
Frog-shaped cookie cutters?
Yes, you can buy frog-shaped cookie cutters. Lizards are good. My daughter is particularly fond of the cats. What do you see what's in your box? I think you got the Christmas treats. I think I was pretty sane with you guys. But if your friends have a sense of humor, it's nice to get amongst the gingerbread men and the little jolly snowmen to have something that's like, what is that? Oh, that's a frog.
And you use ground up nuts.
I do. That helps tenderize the dough. Gingerbread can often be a little bit hard. You know, you crunch into it if you don't have a cup of tea there for dunking, and you go, argh. So the nuts make it a little more tender. It helps the keeping qualities. You can certainly, if you don't want to use nuts, you can leave it out and just make it up in flour. But I do like the way that it just changes the texture. It makes it a little more crumbly.
And you also call for freshly ground nutmeg. How does that taste as opposed to the stuff that you get in the jar?
Nutmeg is one of those things. I mean, I'm sure you've noticed that if you buy ground nutmeg, it is dead, probably by the time you bring it home from the store. I think that it has a lifespan of maybe 6 hours.
And the nutmeg itself is a nut, which probably lasts a really long time.
Exactly. And it's just a lot of spices. I think every spice is better if you grind it right before you use it, but who's going to do that, really? But nutmeg is really easy to grate. You can do it on one of those microplanes. You don't need a special nutmeg grater, and it makes such a difference, and it smells wonderful.
But you use jarred cinnamon.
Yeah, cinnamon will last a lot longer. I mean, always, right before the holiday baking season, I go through my sweet spices and I smell them and I just make sure they smell like something, because if they don't smell like anything, then you really want to throw them out.
Somebody says you should throw out all your spices at the end of a year.
That's probably – I mean, I'm too thrifty to do that. I'll try to maybe get a little more time. But I do – if I open a jar and I smell nothing or I smell very little, I will toss it, because there's no point in using spices if they don't have any flavor. But another thing I use in that gingerbread recipe is fresh ginger root, which you don't see in very many gingerbread recipes. And what's so nice about that is that it gives you sort of this pumped up ginger flavor. And so they're really spicy. They're not just kind of, sweet cookies. They've got a little edge to them, too, which is nice.
And you use brown, dark brown sugar, also molasses.
Yes.
They do different things?
Yes. The molasses helps them, it helps their texture. It gets them very crisp, and it also deepens the color, which is important. Although this year I ran out of molasses, and I was doing this late at night, and I didn't have any molasses, so I used honey. And they're delicious. They're a much lighter color. They're a lighter flavor. They taste almost like those Spekulos cookies. And I think that's a really nice variation. So I'm going to make sure to write that up. So if anyone runs out of molasses, you can just go ahead and use honey, and that's going
to
work.
But you have a lot of stuff that you have to have on hand. Freshly grated orange zest.
Yes.
Freshly grated ginger.
Right, the ginger for the bite. You can leave the orange zest out, although I like it.
And then you say to wrap the dough in plastic, chill it in the refrigerator for at least an hour or overnight.
Or that gingerbread dough will last for probably a week.
Now, one thing you don't ask for is parchment paper on cookie sheets.
Oh, you know, I should probably rewrite that. This year I did something. I did so much baking in one day that I lined my baking sheets with parchment paper, and I just kept reusing the same paper. So, I mean, it wasn't really about being thrifty, although it was very thrifty to reuse the paper.
Well, parchment paper is expensive.
It is expensive, but it's also a pain to cut to size to your baking sheet. So once I've cut it, I didn't have to cut it again. I could just reuse it. But I did the chocolate cookies last, because after you do the chocolate cookies, then you got to throw it out, because then it just kind of gets, you know, chocolatey.
But it does prevent the cookies from burning.
It prevents them from burning. It prevents them from sticking. And another great thing about parchment, for all you bakers out there, you probably know this, but if you don't, if you're baking your first Christmas cookies this year, if you only have two baking sheets and you need three, you can put the cookies out on parchment paper. And then while you're baking two of the sheets in the oven, when they come out, you just slide the sheet of parchment paper with the cookies on it right onto your baking sheet and put it in the oven. It just goes much quicker. It saves you time. It's more efficient.
We have a call from Jeff from Morristown, New Jersey. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. I love your Food Fridays, Leonard, especially when Melissa's on. My wife, every year around the holidays, melts down a quantity of sugar and caramelizes a bunch of walnuts.
Mm.
And then you put them in a nice jar and put a nice bow on it. It makes a great gift. You can make it a week or two ahead of time. It still stays nice and fresh.
Candied nuts.
You can even mail it.
That you can also spice nuts.
Mm-hmm, exactly. That is a great – yes. Candied nuts is that is one of the most fabulous things, because you can do those. Thank you for reminding me about those. That is – and thank you for the nice words. If you can spice them. You can do them plain. You can do any nuts you want. You can do a combination of nuts. You can do coconut flakes in with the nuts, which is really nice. You can mail them. You can – I mean, they're pretty much your go-to gift, and you can do a lot of them at a time, which is great for volume. And if you don't want to do the caramelized sugar thing, although I think that's probably my favorite way to do it, you can do spice nuts with a simple whipped egg white and sugar mixture, and then you toss it with that, and then you bake them. And that sugar mixture kind of becomes it's almost like a little meringue coating the nuts, and that's another way to do it. And I find that is probably the simplest way to do it.
But you can also put a little heat on them.
Yes, you can. Yes.
And you can cook them with onions. There are all sorts of other things with honey.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, if you can do savory
maple
spice
syrup.
Maple syrup is fabulous. You can boil maple syrup down until it's a syrup and do that. Yes, about savory nuts are great. You could do an Indian-flavored spiced cashew, which is delicious. You could do rosemary nuts are beautiful.
In fact, we have a listener, Courtney in Brooklyn, who says that you should quickly roast a mix of nuts and then pour them into a combination of chopped rosemary, brown sugar, kosher salt, cayenne, and a little melted butter.
Mm, yes, and that is a really nice gift. What's nice about that gift is that you tell people, you put this on the label, tell people to put that nut mix in the microwave for 10 or 20 seconds before they serve it.
You don't have a microwave. You told me that.
I do now. I was pre-child. Oh, yeah, I have one anyway. I broke down. I broke down. You know, how do you have a small child without a microwave? How do you make the reheat those dinners really fast? You never forget that, do you?
Well, only because I actually use...
You love your microwave.
Well, I don't use it for a lot of stuff, and my wife thinks that we probably could throw it out. But there are times you want to use it, and there are other times when there are probably better ways to get the same result. We were talking earlier with Chris Kimball, who mm-hmm. doesn't like microwaves, and yet he admits that if you want to get baked potatoes done quickly or mashed potatoes,
yeah.
put them in the microwave, and then put them in the oven, boil them, and it cuts down the time incredibly, and they taste just as good.
And that's the thing about the microwave, especially for something like refreshing nuts. Yes, you could absolutely put those nuts in the oven for 10 minutes, but in the microwave it will take 10 seconds. So, you know, we're adaptable creatures. It's good to keep changing, I think, as you grow, right?
We invite your calls. We're going to be back with more Melissa in a little while, and we'll be taking your calls and reading your comments. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can write us on our show page at WNYC.org, also on Facebook or Twitter. And Melissa Clark will be here in a few minutes, right after the news.
Hi, I'm Ina Garten, the Barefoot Contessa, and you're listening to Food Fridays with Leonard Lopate on WNYC and WNYC.org.
And we are back with Melissa Clark, the James Beard Award-winning food writer, author of, I like to say now, a slew of cookbooks.
I know. I noticed that you're not using the number anymore.
Well, I get confused. I'm getting old. I'm getting confused about those things.
Oh, it's hard to count that many, you know.
Also, the writer of the Wednesday A Good Appetite Dining Section column for the New York Times at newyorktimes.com. And you also have a Twitter account at Good Appetite. Do you get a lot of response?
You know, I've been tweeting less. I should tweet my cookie pictures. I think that I just haven't done that. But I'm going to do that. I'm going to go home and tweet all my cookie pictures. But yes, people are it's a great way to talk to people. People follow me. I follow them. And it keeps me in touch with what people are cooking at home. And I really want to know. Like, for example, I love when people call in and tell me what they're making for gifts and what they're cooking, because it gives me – first of all, it gives me great ideas. And I think that it's also it's just good to know where you are in relation to where everyone else is. So, for example, like those nuts, you know, like I love the idea of making an actual caramel, which I think is a little bit unusual. And it also shows a high level of proficiency in the kitchen, which is nice to hear.
Let's go to a call. Olivia from Newark. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? Melissa, you sound absolutely amazing. You're so high energy, and this is fantastic.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you.
I was wondering, I want to build a gingerbread house. I'm a huge nerd. I love Doctor Who and Serenity and all those shows, and I want to build, like, a spaceship.
Oh, my God, that's so cool.
But I have a great gingerbread cookie recipe, but I don't know what to do to make the actual gingerbread, like, walls.
Okay, yeah, so this is the kind of thing where if you had a 3D printer, it would be really helpful right now. Because you have to figure out how to. I would say, you know, if it's your first one, keep it on the simple side. I love the idea of doing something like crazy, like a spaceship. But so this is the way to do it, is you cut it out in paper first. So you cut out your shapes in paper and you tape it together so you know what shapes you need and what the structure is going to look like. And then you take it apart. So you've got your paper. Or cardboard's even better, because you can use it then as a stencil. So you cut it out in cardboard, you tape it together, you know what it's going to look like, you take it apart, and then you keep those cardboard pieces as a stencil. And when you roll out your dough, you just take a little paring knife, you put your cardboard down on top of the dough, and you cut it out. And then you bake those pieces. And then, instead of tape, when you glue it together, you use royal icing.
Royal icing. Okay, now how is that different from regular icing?
It's much sturdier. It's really like glue, and when it dries, it dries like mortar. I mean, you can make one of those things, and it will just last for months. And if you used regular icing and you tried to put it together, it would start to melt. Because it's egg. You know how I don't know if you did this when you were a kid, you'd make like a little egg paste and it would be like a glue? So egg is a very good medium for gluing things. So a royal icing is just egg and powdered sugar. And you beat it together and when it dries, it gets very strong and very hard. And it's super easy to find a recipe for that. Just Google it and it'll come up.
Okay.
Do I have to bake it a different way than I bake the gingerbread cookies?
The royal icing doesn't get baked at all. So you bake your gingerbread cookies.
I meant the actual cookie part.
No, just do it the same way you just do it. You want to bake it. I would bake it crisp, though. Don't bake it. Make sure that it's really cooked. Do it at a lower temperature. Here's just a general baking tip for everybody. If you want a chewy cookie that's like soft in the center and chewy and then golden on the edges, you bake at a higher temperature, like 375. Good for chocolate chips and oatmeal raisin. If you want a cookie that's cooked all the way through, like this gingerbread, you want it to be thoroughly dry, bake it at 325. And it'll take a little longer.
You mentioned that eggs can be like glue. It strikes me that egg yolks are kind of like the universal emulsifier.
Yeah.
If you want to incorporate cinnamon powder, for example, mm-hmm. into a recipe, if you just put it on, let's say, for a pancake batter, it's just going to sit there in flakes. But if you mix it in with an egg yolk, actually, this is for French toast. If you mix it in with an egg yolk, mm-hmm. it completely incorporates.
Yeah,
and in fact, the egg yolk will incorporate practically anything.
Yeah, it's great. In fact, that is a great way, especially for cookies. If you want to add, say that you want to put like pretty colored sugar on your cookies before you bake them, egg is a great glue. If you use the whole egg or the yolk, you're going to get a little bit of that color, which can be really pretty. You can also just use the egg white. And so you just beat up either your egg or your egg white, and you bake. You shape your beautiful cookies, so you cut them out. This works really well with slice. You ever do slice and bake cookies where instead of rolling them out with a rolling pin and cutting it out with cookie cutters, you just roll your dough into a log, you chill it, and then you slice it. And then to make those fancy and pretty, you put I like to use egg white, a little egg white, and then some beautiful sugars, those sanding sugars and all those different colors, and you bake it and they come out gorgeous, and they're easy and anybody can make them tonight. And if you give a little gift bag of those, people will be thrilled. Can we talk about packaging?
Wait, a listener asks, is raw egg a problem in the icing? Can you heat it or pasteurized eggs?
You can use pasteurized eggs. You can also use something called egg white powder or meringue powder, although that's a little bit hard to find. Some large supermarkets will have it. You can get it online for sure. Baking supply store have it. I use eggs from the farmer's market, so I'm very careful about the eggs that I use.
And you want to talk about packaging.
Yes, I want to talk about packaging. Okay, because you can make just the simplest, most humble cookies in the world. And if you put them in a pretty package, it takes on this momentous thing. It becomes this beautiful gift. So really think about packaging before you give your gift, and not just for cookies, but also for beautiful jars, for a beautiful jar of nuts with a big bow on it. Lemon curd or citrus curd is great to make. That's another wonderful gift that you can make ahead. You can make it today. You can give it the same day, you can give it the next day. It's a great last-minute gift, or you can make it a week ahead and keep it in the fridge. And if you find a beautiful jar, even just a simple ball jar that you get at the hardware store, but if you find a really lovely ribbon and a really pretty tag, like these are the things that show you took the extra few minutes to make it really special. And I think that buying ribbon is as much part of my Christmas cookie tradition. I'll buy different ribbons for the boxes, or I'll buy sometimes I'll do some glitter, you know, just to take that time to personalize it and make the package special.
We have a call from John from Paramus who doesn't want to talk about cookies, wants to talk about something else that he has read in your column. Hi, John.
How you doing, Leonard? Happy holidays to everyone. I have to commend you on your column, Melissa, on Wednesday about the fish dinner for Christmas Eve.
Ah, thank you.
It was absolutely outstanding. Even my wife was overwhelmed. She's not a foodie like I am, but she's Italian, but she remembers that. But it was absolutely outstanding. It's a keeper. It goes right into my file with some of your other recipes and others, but it was absolutely outstanding.
Can we get to the point, John? Enough of the compliments. She's blushing.
I am blushing. Oh, you're so – no, I like it. No, let him talk. Don't interrupt him. Keep going, John.
The best thing about it was your opening line. As a Jewish girl from Brooklyn, why do I enjoy these meals so much at Christmas Eve? But it was great. It was absolutely terrific.
Great, thanks.
It reminded me when I was a kid, and my mother used to make all that stuff. And I even make it on occasion, too, some Christmas Eve. But
Do you have a question?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought you had a question.
He's calling to Cavell.
Well, that's nice.
Well, thank you for your call. That's lovely.
We go now to Valerie from Westchester. Hi, Valerie. Oh, Weehawken. Weehawken. I moved you.
That's okay. Hi, it's Valerie from Weehawken. I love Food Fridays. I make a rock and roll granola, and it's become our standard holiday gift every year. People now bring me back the jars after they've emptied the jars and demand it the following year. And I've tried to stop making it because after a while it actually became really expensive to make because I was making so much of it. And shipping it got a little bit heavy. But the public has demanded that I keep making it every Christmas.
So what's in it? What's in it?
Well, it's really simple. It's oats and wheat germ, sesame seeds, sunflower seeds, almonds. I do cranberries. You can manipulate the recipe to use any dried fruit or nut. It's super simple. And now that my son, who's 9, loves being in the kitchen and is cooking more on his own, he helps me with it. And we package it in mason jars with a homemade rock and roll granola label. And it's been sort of now the family recipe, and it's really fun to make. And we open what we call the granola factory around the first week of December. And
there's no cooking involved, is there?
It's baking. You bake for about 40 minutes at about 300 degrees, and you kind of stir it every 10, 15 minutes to make sure it doesn't burn. But you can make a batch in an hour, and it's and it lasts, you know, as long as people are downing it. Some people return before Christmas for a refill. But
do you put sugar in it?
I don't. I put
maple syrup,
honey.
Honey. Do you? What's your oil? That's another good thing you can do with granola is change up the oil. What kind of? Or do you use butter? What do you use for the fat?
I use a canola oil, mm-hmm. and I know some people have used coconut oil, but I mean, I use a canola oil. And I have to say, the first year I got very organic. I bought all the organic ingredients, and that just broke me. I was totally broke by the end of that holiday season. So now I use conventional products, but
it's a homemade gift. It's a homemade gift. It's made with love. It's fabulous.
Exactly. And for me, the thing about granola is it usually is too sweet. So this is a really nice recipe. It's not too sweet because you're only using a half a cup of the honey and you're not adding the dried fruit until the granola has cooled. And that's a lesson I learned the hard way. You don't add any of your dried fruit until the granola is totally cooled. Otherwise, they turn into like rock pellets in there.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for calling us.
That is a great, yes, granola is another great gift. It's funny. So this year I had to make gifts for the teachers at my daughter's school. And usually I will do something like granola or I'll do spiced nuts, again, something that you can do in volume. And, of course, it's a nut-free school. So I was thinking, oh, gosh, you know. I didn't do it yet, but I was thinking, how can I do a granola that is just as chunky and tasty that doesn't have any nuts in it? So that might be my next year. I'm going to work on that over the year.
There are now nut-free schools. If that had happened when I was a kid, half the kids in my class wouldn't have been allowed in school.
I don't know how Dahlia made it in there either, actually.
Could you tell us about your kumquat clementine cordial?
Yeah.
Is this your own invention?
Probably not. I feel like probably there's no... Someone probably has done it somewhere else.
Ed
but
Barrett
I did.
once said that there is no new recipe.
Exactly.
Somebody's done it somewhere, sometime.
Exactly. I'm sure someone has done this, but it is something I thought up sort of independently. Well, it's something that I adapted. So I loved the idea of making a homemade fruit wine or a liqueur for people. But in an ideal world, I would start that when you can get amazing fresh fruit in the middle of the summer. Like if I was really organized, I would make a peach cordial and I'd do it in July when the peaches are ripe, and then I would store it because you have to age these things for a while before they become really smooth and mellow.
Just put them in the fridge?
Yeah, you put them in the fridge and you let them steep for a while, then you strain them, then you decant them, then you put them back in the fridge. But I didn't have a couple of months to do that. And then I thought, well, what if I just essentially mixed up a little cocktail. So what I've done is I've taken a spirit, and if you use any high-proof spirit, it's going to keep something for a long time. So you can store this very well, either at room temperature for a day or two or in the fridge. And I've added fresh citrus juice. I've added spices. I've added just a little bit of sugar. And you have this lovely, it's a cordial. It's a cocktail. It's just a sweet alcoholic libation.
You use white rum.
And you can use anything, though. Yes, you could use rum. You could use just pick your favorite spirit. As long as it's better to use a high-proof spirit than, say, a wine because it will last longer.
And along these lines, Joe from Bayside has a recipe. Hi, Joe.
Hi. My recipe is for limoncello.
Oh, perfect.
Italian digestive. And we got this recipe from my wife's cousin when she visited us. So I have to give it to you in metric system because that's the way she taught us. Take a dozen lemons, and it's good to get the thick lemons because you want to get the peel without the white pith, and they're easier to peel. In fact, I remember when she was using our lemons here doing it, she had some disparaging comments about American lemons compared to Italian lemons.
Wow.
But anyway, you take the peel of a dozen lemons, you mix it with a liter of grain alcohol, if you can get it. You can't get that in New York. You can get it in Jersey. But if you can't find the grain alcohol, just use a vodka, strong, plain vodka. You pour them together. You pour it over the lemon peel in a large glass jar. You let it sit for 3 weeks. After 3 weeks, you pour off that liquid, and you mix it with a homemade syrup. And the syrup is just simply a liter of water. You boil it. You add 800 grams of sugar, You let it come to room temperature. You mix the two together. And you got limoncello.
See, that is the perfect thing for people who can plan 3 weeks ahead. Uh-huh. You know, but it's no. I love. You can do that. You can also do the same thing. You can use mixed citrus. I mean, that's a classic limoncello. Ooh, Meyer lemons are fabulous if you can find those. They're thin skinned. And so point taken that they're harder to peel, but they have such a lovely fragrance.
But nobody's called them with an eggnog recipe.
You know, eggnog you can make for people. That is a great gift, Leonard. That is a fabulous gift because you can make it ahead. You can put it in a nice, you know, wine-sized bottle, or you can get smaller bottles. And people do have to store it in the fridge. But how lovely to have someone else mix up your homemade fresh eggnog for you.
Just one more thing. Lizzie asks on our show page, what do you think about using... Is it Silpat instead of parchment paper?
You know, you certainly can use Silpat. Silpats, however, they do have a shelf life. It depends on how much you bake, but you will have to replace them every once in a while. You know, they're totally fine. I never have enough Silpats to go with the number of baking trays I have. The Silpats don't fit exactly on my cookie sheets. They fit in my half sheet pans, but they don't fit on my cookie sheets. And I want to have, you know, the difference between a cookie sheet and a half sheet pan. People use them interchangeably, but a cookie sheet has no sides, so you get much better browning. So I make cookies on cookie sheets, and they don't fit exactly right on my cookie sheets. So I use parchment paper, but of course, Silpats work.
Melissa, have a great holiday.
You too, Leonard. Thank you.
Melissa Clark is James Beard Award-winning food writer, writes a good appetite column every Wednesday in the dining section for the New York Times and NewYorkTimes.com. You can also follow her on Twitter @GoodAppetite. And I look forward to seeing you after the new year.
Me too.